The Katra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of the Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're opening up a really foundational text, one that didn't just record history, but, well, pretty much manufactured. We're talking about the Gallic Wars, or Commentary de Bello Gallico in Latin, penned by the man himself, Gaius Julius Caesar.
Right. And, you know, most people hear Caesar and think General Gaul, conquest, modern France, Belgium, that area. But if you just see this as like a dusty old history book about troop movements, you're kind of missing the real point, the true mission behind it.
Yeah, that's really the core thing we found digging into this. It's not just a military report card. It's actually one of history's earliest, and you could argue most effective pieces of strategic political communication.
Yeah.
It wasn't just written to, you know, document what happened. It was designed, carefully designed, to defend what Caesar did, polish his reputation, and basically pave his way to ultimate power back in Rome.
Exactly. It's like an instruction manual for spinning history, but it's all dressed up as objective fact. And for you listening, it's just a brilliant case study in how powerful leaders frame events, how they control the narrative to shape their own political destiny.
Okay, so let's start with the man himself. Gaius Julius Caesar lived 100 to 44 BCE. We have to remember this guy wasn't just some general who randomly decided to invade Gaul. No, he was a very established, ambitious Roman politician. He'd been playing the political game in Rome for decades.
Oh, yeah. He was a master of the cursus honorum, that strict ladder of political offices in Rome. He climbed his way up, quaestor, aedile, praetor, and then finally got to consul in 59 BCE. And that political background is absolutely vital. It means he knew exactly who his enemies in the Senate were, what kind of criticisms they'd throw at him about this war.
And crucially, he wasn't just a sharp politician. He was also known as a genuine, talented writer. Even Cicero, his big rival, the famous orator, actually praised Caesar's clear, elegant prose style. That skill with words is what lets him turn a military diary into a political weapon.
Yeah, and what makes his viewpoint so unique, so powerful, is that he's wearing two hats at once. He's the commanding general, the guy actually doing things, the protagonist.
No.
But he's also the author, the analyst presenting it all. His authority comes directly from being the commander-in-chief on the ground.
Nobody else had that perspective.
Yeah.
His account isn't based on like rumors flying around Rome or secondhand reports. It's direct, firsthand intel, strategy straight from the top.
He was the only one with access to all the diplomatic messages, the battle plans, the big picture strategy. And because he knew he was writing this for a skeptical audience back in Rome, particularly the Senate, he understood he couldn't just report the facts. He had to craft the narrative strategically.
Okay, so let's talk about the book itself. On the surface, The Gallic Wars is this systematic military memoir, right? It covers 8 years of campaigning, 58 down to 50 BCE, details the conquest of Gaul, the huge expansion of Roman territory, and let's not forget the massive wealth that came with it.
But underneath that surface, the central premise is really a defense. It's a justification for a war that, honestly, a lot of powerful people in Rome thought was illegal, or maybe just driven by Caesar's personal ambition. His political enemies weren't quiet about it either. They were loud, they were influential. So Caesar absolutely had to convince the Roman elite that he wasn't conquering Gaul for his own glory.
Right, he had to frame it as something else entirely.
As a necessity, that's the core argument running through all seven books that Caesar wrote himself. Book 8 was likely added by one of his officers later. But Caesar's argument is consistent. This whole conquest, it was defensive, absolutely necessary. He argues over and over that Rome was under threat from, you know, unstable migrating tribes, aggressive Germanic kings. He was just doing preemptive strikes to protect Roman allies and Roman stability.
It's fascinating how he pulls that off rhetorically.
Mm-hmm.
How does he create this feeling of, like, objective necessity? Because it's pretty aggressive stuff he's describing.
Ah, that's the genius part, isn't it? It's something the sources really highlight. He almost never uses I. He doesn't say, I, Julius Caesar, marched my legions here and defeated the enemy there. No, he writes almost entirely in the third person, refers to himself impersonally as Caesar.
All right, so it's Caesar did this, Caesar decided that.
Exactly, like Caesar, having received this intelligence, decided. It just strips out the personal ego, the ambition, the passion. It makes him sound less like the ambitious general driving events and more like a detached, objective observer just reporting on things that happen to involve him.
That is clever. It's a brilliant way to manage his image, makes his aggressive actions sound more credible, more justified.
Yeah, it basically served as this massive extended campaign advertisement. It cemented his reputation, not just with the Senate elite, but with the wider literate public, too, as this, you know, national hero dedicated only to Rome's interests.
Okay, let's get into the campaigns themselves then, because the way he tells the story is so meticulous. It builds credibility with each described victory. It kicks off with that really famous opening line in Book One. All Gaul is divided into three parts. Instantly, that analytical tone sets him up as the authority, the expert who's got it all figured out.
And the very first big event he covers in Book One, it's the migration of the Helvetii tribe. They're trying to move en masse through Roman territory. Caesar immediately frames this as like an urgent existential threat to Rome's allies nearby. So his intervention, it's presented as purely humanitarian, a security necessity.
Ah, so he establishes the pattern right from the start. Every Roman action is just a response to some Gallic provocation or threat.
Exactly. Then you get into Book Two, and there's this really terrifying close call, the Battle of the Sabes against the Nervio tribe. They launch this incredibly effective surprise attack, and it almost wipes out several Roman legions. It was chaos.
Okay, wait. If this is propaganda, why include a near disaster? Wouldn't that undermine his image?
Well, that's the clever bit. He includes it precisely because it lets him highlight his own personal leadership under extreme pressure. He makes a point of describing how he, Caesar, rushed to the front line. He says he didn't even have his shield, grabbed a standard from a soldier, and personally rallied the confused, wavering troops.
Well, okay, so the near disaster becomes a backdrop for his personal heroism.
Precisely. It's an anecdote tailor-made to show incredible courage, inspire loyalty back home, and basically prove he's indispensable on the battlefield.
Then in Book Three, we see Roman adaptability, right? The campaign against the Veneti, who were these seafaring people on the Atlantic coast. Romans weren't great sailors.
Not at all. But Caesar doesn't just shrug and give up. The sources show his engineers figuring out new tactics on the fly. They invented these long poles with, like, hooks on the end, specifically designed to cut the ropes and rigging on the sturdy Veneti ships, disabling them. It's about technical ingenuity winning out over brute force or traditional methods.
And that technical skill, that engineering focus, it just explodes into this massive spectacle in Book Four. I mean, Caesar decides he needs to cross the Rhine River to intimidate the German tribes. But instead of just using boats...
Which would have been logical, but no. He orders the construction of a huge timber pile bridge across the Rhine, one of Europe's major rivers, and they build it in just 10 days.
10 days? I mean, just think about the logistics, the manpower, the engineering knowledge needed for that in hostile territory on a deadline.
It was absolutely a feat of engineering, and maybe less about pure military strategy and more about spectacle. It was a physical demonstration of Roman power, Roman determination, Roman technological superiority, designed to completely awe both the Germans on the other side and probably just as importantly, his political rivals back in Rome.
But as you said, it wasn't all smooth sailing. And that brings us to the big crisis moment in Book V, the ambush and destruction of an entire legion, plus support troops under Sabinus and Cotta, wiped out by this clever Gallic leader, Ambiorix. That must have been a huge blow.
It was his most serious setback, yeah. A real shock, and a stark reminder that this war was incredibly dangerous and costly in Roman lives.
So how does he handle that in his narrative? He can't just ignore it.
No, he doesn't hide it. Instead, he uses the disaster to magnify his own critical leadership quality. Celeritas, that's Latin for speed, swiftness. He emphasizes the absolutely lightning-fast, forced march he undertook to rescue another besieged camp commanded by Quintus Cicero, the orator's brother, actually arriving just in the nick of time.
Ah, so the disaster gets blamed on the dead commanders, maybe their lack of caution, while Caesar's speed and decisive action saved the day elsewhere. Clever deflection.
Very clever. Then, before we get to the final showdown, Book Six has that famous section, the ethnographic interlude. He takes a detour to describe the social structures, customs, religion, the Druids, the Knights, all that of both the Gauls and the Germans.
Which might seem like just, you know, anthropological curiosity.
But it's not just curiosity. It's strategic intelligence presented as objective description.
Right. By defining the barbarian societies, he's showing he understands his enemy, their strengths, their weaknesses, their internal rivalries.
Exactly, which allows him to exploit those divisions, divide and conquer. It also subtly reinforces the idea that Rome is bringing order, civilization to these less structured peoples. It bolsters the civilizing mission argument.
And all of this leads up to the real climax of the war, which comes in Book 7. That's when Vercingetorix emerges.
Yes. Vercingetorix is different. He's the first Gallic leader who manages to actually unify a large number of tribes, a truly formidable, charismatic opponent for Caesar.
And this sets the stage for the absolute defining moment of the entire war. The Siege of Alesia.
Alesia is just, wow, peak Caesar. Military genius meets engineering brilliance. So Vercingetorix and his huge army are trapped inside the hilltop town of Alesia. But then an even bigger Gallic relief army arrives on the outside to break the siege.
So Caesar's caught in the middle. Enemies inside the town, enemies outside surrounding him. That sounds like a nightmare scenario.
It should have been. But Caesar's response is legendary. The double fortification strategy. He orders his legions to build one massive wall facing inward, trapping Vercingetorix's army. Then they build a second, even bigger, more complex wall facing outward to defend against the Gallic relief force.
So like a giant ring fortress miles around fighting in two directions at once.
Exactly. Miles and miles of ditches, ramparts, watchtowers, traps. A complete 360-degree defensive and offensive system. It's just an unbelievable testament to Roman discipline, engineering, and logistics. And that's ultimately what breaks the Gauls. Their numbers couldn't overcome that level of organized Roman power.
And that victory at Alesia, that basically crushed organized Gallic resistance, didn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. It effectively ended the war, though mopping up operations continued for a bit.
Okay, so looking back at this whole epic, this 8-year political saga, cleverly disguised as a military memoir, what are the big takeaways for us today? Let's start with that narrative control thing. Theme one, propaganda and framing.
Yeah, this is maybe the most crucial insight. Controlling how an argument is framed is often way more powerful than just controlling the facts themselves. Caesar never denied he waged war, obviously, but he just relentlessly reframed every single aggressive move as a defensive necessity for Rome's protection.
So the lesson is, if you're, say, a leader today, maybe in politics or business, managing some controversial policy or project.
Yeah.
You have to define the narrative, define the purpose before your critics define the action for you. Frame it carefully.
Absolutely. Then theme two, you just can't miss it. Roman military and engineering superiority. Those incredible feats like the Rhine Bridge, the massive siege works at Alesia. They scream discipline, technical skill, logistical mastery. These are the ultimate force multipliers.
Right. It sort of teaches us that organization, superior systems, better engineering, better logistics, that stuff will eventually wear down just raw numbers or chaotic energy. So in like modern business or managing big projects, maybe investing in how the systems, the planning, the logistics is often more critical than just throwing more people at a problem.
Well put. And theme three, leadership and personal loyalty. Caesar's narrative constantly shows him right there in the thick of it, sharing danger with his men, rallying them personally, keeping that clear vision even when things looked bad, like at the Sabis battle.
Yeah, he wasn't hiding back at a command tent miles away.
No, and that visibility, especially during crises, that physical presence, demonstrating courage yourself, that's what generates real, fierce personal loyalty, not just, you know, formal obedience to rank. Modern leadership could take a page from that, being visible and showing genuine concern, especially when times are tough.
Definitely. Okay, finally, theme four, cultural intelligence as a strategic asset. That whole section detailing Gallic society wasn't just for show.
Not at all. It was hardcore strategic intelligence, his detailed study of their political structures, their rivalries, their customs that gave him the insight he needed.
He wasn't just conquering land. He was navigating and manipulating a really complex political landscape.
Yeah. Success, whether it's in war or business or even navigating office politics, often requires that deep, almost anthropological understanding of the environment you're in. You need to know the internal fault lines, the strengths, the weaknesses of your competitors, or even your allies sometimes. He knew how to divide the Gauls before conquering them.
The book is also just packed with these powerful, memorable lines about strategy and power. Let's touch on a few of those.
We should definitely start with that opening again. All Gaul is divided into three parts. Beyond just the geography, that analytical, almost clinical tone immediately establishes Caesar as the expert. He's the one who's already organized this complex situation for you. He owns the understanding.
And while it comes from a bit later in his career, that famous phrase, veni, vidi, vidi, I came, I saw, I conquered, it perfectly captures the spirit he projects in the Gallic Wars.
Mm-hmm.
That speed, that decisiveness, that celeritas we mentioned, it's central to his leadership brand.
Right, but you have to contrast that almost impulsive decisiveness with the caution that's also there. Like his observation In war, events of importance are the result of trivial causes.
Mm.
That shows a general who understands that huge outcomes can pivot on the smallest details. A missed message, a logistical hiccup, some minor oversight. Attention to detail matters immensely.
And maybe the line that really sums up his whole justification for acting fast and hard rather than waiting. It is better to suffer once than to remain in perpetual expectation of suffering. Basically, hit fast, hit hard, and the threat decisively, even if it's painful up front, because that's better than living in constant fear or instability.
Yeah, these aren't just ancient history quotes. They have real echoes today. Think about strategic communication and reputation management.
Totally. When a company or a politician today rolls out some controversial policy or maybe makes a big, potentially disruptive acquisition, watch how they frame it. Often, they use the Caesar playbook. Present the aggressive action as necessary protection. We're protecting jobs, protecting shareholder value, protecting ourselves from some external threat. It's framed as defensive, not self-serving.
It's straight out of the Gallic Wars. And what about crisis management and adaptability? Look at how Caesar dealt with actual setbacks, like that ambush in Book V, or an earlier tactical defeat at Gergovia. He didn't see them as the end of the world, as final failures. He treated them like urgent new data, information demanding a quick rethink, strategic flexibility so he could win the next battle, the decisive one.
That's a great point. And for anyone involved in large-scale operations, there's advanced project management lessons here too. I mean, Caesar coordinating multiple campaigns at once, fighting on the coast, building massive siege works inland, managing cavalry across vast distances, all while keeping complex supply lines running over hundreds of miles.
Yeah, it's practically a historical case study for modern large-scale project management. Resource allocation, timing, coordinating different teams across different locations. It's all there.
So for me, really digging into this, what was most surprising, or maybe impressive, was just the sheer integration of skills. Caesar wasn't just winning on the battlefield. He was winning the engineering challenges, and he was simultaneously winning the political communications war back home. It was this mastery across multiple domains at once. That feels like true leadership.
Yeah, I agree. And for me, the final takeaway is just how timeless the Gallic Wars is as a study in power, but specifically in narrative control. It really teaches you that managing the events themselves, the battles, the building projects, the political moves, that's maybe only half the battle. You also have to master the story about those events. Because controlling the narrative, shaping how things are understood and remembered, that's ultimately how you build influence and secure your legacy. Even supposedly objective reporting can be an incredibly powerful tool of influence.
A powerful lesson indeed. Controlling the story is as important as controlling the events.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acacha Foundation.